the genius of Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, as he joins us today. They're going to look at those shifts and say, well, how does Wotus come up with that stuff?
Well, good morning, Marty. Good afternoon, I should say.
Ron.
It was supposed to be morning. Good morning, Patrick. Afternoon.
A lot going on in baseball this week. We had Scherzer with 20 strikeouts and all the stuff going on in Washington. We had the slide last weekend of Texas and Batista, the fight. But I want to start with Jason Hayward, because you've been around this ballpark for a long time. And we talked about it. We made it to Coors Light. Great grab of the week. The catch, from your viewpoint, the ball hit by Span and the catch.
Well, very appropriate to make it the catch of the week because, you know, been here since the ballpark opened, so we've seen every game in this ballpark, and there's been some great catches in Triples Alley, but I think he went as far as any player has ever gone to make a catch, and to do it at the base of the wall, diving and then hitting the wall, I hadn't seen that before. You know, you've seen guys catch balls out in that area, but they were starting a lot deeper, kind of bunching that gap, playing a lot further back, and he was not, so the combination of, the catch going that distance and having to deal with the wall and start the game. I mean, look, that was a big game. They have their ace on them. And that ball lands. We hopefully have one run in the first inning, and it really changed the game right from the get-go.
Well, I've been watching Jason Hayward a long time, and he's such an exquisite defender, the ground he covers, like you mentioned. And just tell us about what kind of courage it takes to go out there and take on that wall, knowing that it's going to be some pain coming up.
Well, you know, those are the type of players you want on the field. I mean, you don't want anybody to run into the wall unnecessarily to hurt themselves.
But, at that price tag, too, right?
Well, especially. I mean, he's one of your studs on the field. You don't want him out of the lineup. And I think you have to be smart and pick and choose if you're going to do something crazy. But I think when he dove for that ball, he didn't anticipate crashing into the wall the way that he did. So, and I got a feeling, knowing Jason Hayward, even if he was a few steps closer to the wall, he would have done the same thing to try to catch the baseball.
Boy, what a way to start the weekend, though, with Jake Arrieta. He's won 19 in a row. My God, the team's won 22. And, you know, it's one of the games of baseball. And just get your thought about Friday night, then we'll move on. But, you get guys on against Arrieta. Posey hits one, and looks like it could be 5-4 at that point. And it goes right to the edge of the wall, and as I say, that's baseball.
Yeah, well, he's definitely one of the top pitchers in the game today. What he did last year, what he's doing this year. He's got great movement. He's got great angle. It's hard to pick up his pitches. And, you just don't get good swings off this guy. And I thought, as a club, although we didn't get to him, I thought the game could have been different. We talked about Span's ball, if that falls in. Buster hit one with men on base. I thought we put up some good at-bats against Arrieta. And with a little luck, maybe it would have been a different outcome. But he's one of the best in the game. There's no question about it.
Yeah, good weekend series. Good weekend series. So yesterday, the story of the game for us yesterday, as it turned out, was Matt Cain. And, well, I say it to you, over 162, the big three will do their thing. They can't pitch 260 innings. You can't do that. It doesn't happen in the modern game. You need that fourth or fifth guy to do it. And what did you see in Cain yesterday that changed for him? It's his third good one in a row.
Right. I think that's the key. I think that his last few starts have been more Cain-like than earlier. He's off to surgery. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. I see a lot more confidence. He was in the spring. He missed some time in spring training. So he really didn't get his feet underneath him to go into the season the way he wanted to. But this is Matt Cain. We're seeing more of the way he can pitch. He kept the ball out of the middle of the plate. He made great pitches. He was able to throw his off-speed pitches behind in the count. All the things that you want to see a pitcher do, he did it yesterday and through a tough lineup.
Yeah, big time. Matt Cain even mentioned how important it was for him to get that elusive win. He hadn't got one since, June 22nd of last year.
It's hard to believe, Pat.
And so
300 major league starts. That was his 300th yesterday. 300th major league start and his 98th win. Can you imagine that for an elite pitcher?
Yeah. It's hard. I didn't realize it's been that long before he's had a win. That's some bad luck mixed in there because he's pitched way better than that. But that makes a difference for you. You want the wins. Yeah. You want to leave the game with the lead. When you go out there every fifth day, that's what you're trying to do. So I'm happy for Matty, he's throwing the ball the way we know he can throw it.
I know sabermetricians would tell you that the win doesn't matter for a starting pitcher, and there is some relevance to that. But to me, It looks pretty good for a guy like Matt Kane, and he's got that locomotive building up that steam. He's getting that momentum, and I'm sure his confidence is rising with each start, huh?
No question. And it's the same thing as a hitter. You know, I was talking to Kral the other day about this. You know, hitters go up to the plate, and they hit a line drive right at somebody. They come back to the dugout, and you go, hey, way to hit the ball. Some guys are pissed, right? They don't want to hear that. They just want the hit. Yeah. It's no different for anybody. A pitcher, a player, you want results. A game's based on results. So it does affect you, and it gives you confidence. You bloop three hits in, you go home that night probably with more confidence, and if you hit the ball hard three times right at people, wow, you should feel better about that,
right.
But the results is what makes you feel good.
Yeah, you know, I learned in talking with you over the years that the save can come at any time in a ball game, and Osich taking care of Anthony Rizzo, I mean, that was hard-nosed bait. That was hardball.
Yeah.
And then Lopez coming in, and all the switching went on, and I guess Joe Maddon says, all right, I want Fedorovich against Lopez, and that's what he wanted. Fedorovich was 3-for-5 against lefties, but he didn't realize that Lopez hasn't given up a hit all year to a righty.
Yeah.
So I love the chess game yesterday.
It was. It was a typical chess game. You have two managers that aren't afraid to burn a guy to get the matchup they want. You know, they've been doing it so long. This is what they live for, to get the matchup that they want. And as you had mentioned, 2 points in the game. I mean, especially the Osich at bat with Rizzo was a huge moment in the game. I mean, they're got two guys on. The guy can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and to get that strikeout was huge. And then for Javi, as you said, you know, Javi's been around the block, righty lefty. He's not going to lay one right down the middle. And he pitched Fedorovich fantastic. He kept the ball out of the middle of the plate and got the big punch out.
Yeah, I loved it. That was good baseball. All right, you're the architect, as I say. A joke, but tonight it's ESPN, and shifts are such a big deal in baseball. And I, driving in today, I was listening to Jack Sorensic. Remember him?
Yeah.
He was on the Pittsburgh Pirate Radio Network because they had a rain delay. And he was talking, and then Dave Van Horn was talking. I heard him on the Marlin Network. I heard a lot of good stuff today. And I'm going to ask you a question about the Pirates. You were a Pirate guy early on. But they talked about the William shift, the Ted Williams shift. Now, the greatest hitter who ever lived in the 46th season, the 46th World Series, Lou Boudreau, the manager of Cleveland, came up with a shift. And I'm going to explain it to you and get your idea about it. And Eddie Dyer, who managed the Cardinals in the World Series, had a shift. Williams was such a notorious hitter to right field. Well, they put everybody on the right side, except for the left fielder, who was like a short fielder, and that's the way they went at Williams. Now, I ask you this. You're a shift guy. Why not put everybody over on that right side? They're going to hit it there anyway. Why not put them all out there?
Right. Well, I think that's what's happening in the game today. You know, it's a game of percentages, and there's so much information today, which they didn't have back when Ted Williams was playing. They were just reading the swing, and they said, hey, this is what he's going to do. You know, and the bunt wasn't fearful to them back then. Today, it's a little bit different. You know, guys will bunt, and you don't know what base runner is going to make a difference. Now, you'll say, well, that guy's a home run hitter. Let him bunt. That's not always the case. Okay. You know, if you need runners and you need runners to get on base, you don't want anybody on base. And there's a psychological effect of shifting a guy, and a guy gets jammed and hits from where somebody should be. So it's not as simple psychologically to the players today to just put everybody over on the other side of the field and take your chance. I think there's times to do it. There's you know, situations in the game that you're going to be more aggressive defensively, and there's other times that you're going to probably be a little more tentative. But you showed me the picture of the Williams shift. So, you know, people that don't want the shift in baseball, this thing's been going on a long, long time.
Yeah, 1946 for that one, and they said it went back to the 20s and 30s, where Earl Averill, another name out of the Cleveland Indians, passed. And they shifted on him the same way.
Wow. I want to ask Ron about the lineup yesterday and what kind of nerves maybe Kelby Tomlinson had going out to left field and bunting from the three hole and pushing panic over to third. That was pretty crucial, right? But first, I got to ask Marty, what had you on the Pittsburgh Radio Network? Well, I mean, and going around to the Marlins?
Well,
it's incredible scouting.
You know, so yep. You're driving in, and you know, okay. I was listening, and I wanted to hear the Colorado game.
Uh-huh.
So they're up 1-0, and okay. I'm listening to this Jack Sorensic going on and on and on, and it was a rain delay.
Well, I'm glad
so
you heard it.
Then I switched over to Washington and the Marlins, and Washington's winning 3-0, yep. And Dave Van Horn was going on about the shift and the longest at-bats he had ever seen. You know, 18 pitch at bats, 19 Wait, you do you have a long at bat in memory?
Mine were a little quicker, I think. Look, those are impressive to think about, though, because we can, you know, none are coming to the top of my head, but there's at bats. Sometimes a guy doesn't get a hit, but he makes a pitcher throw 15 pitches, and it starts a rally. I mean, guy comes back to the dugout. That's the one time that he didn't have good results, but you say, hey, great at bat, way to make him work. And it can make a difference in the game.
Well, what about the Sergio Romo, Jay Bruce in Cincinnati? That was a long at bat. And Pagan, I think, caught it to really crush that rally, right?
Yeah, no question. And I think for me personally, that was one of the scariest at-bats that I had to live through in my professional career because it was a battle. And, you know, Jay Bruce in that ballpark, he can hit the ball out at any moment. And what was at stake? So, no, I remember that one very well, and I'm getting a little anxious just thinking about it.
I think you mentioned Alex Cora. I had won like a 19-pitch at bat, and the last pitch of the bat, he hit a home run,
wow.
A two-run homer at that point. I always say if a pitcher is getting into a battle like that, 12, 14, 15 pitches, hit him. Just hit him and get him out of here. And that, you know, because nothing good's going to come at the end of this at bat.
A lot of guys did that in the old days. You know, yeah. The heck with this. This guy's wearing me out. I'm going to put him on first base and move to the next
man. That's it. You hit him. All right. Ron Wotus with us, the bench coach, the professor. All right, professor, you're the architect of shifts. I'm into this today because I was listening to all this on the radio this morning. We talked a little bit about no doubles. And now, you know, Pat, no doubles defense.
Sure.
Late in the game, you don't want to double because it could score a run or the guy gets in scoring position. How about shifting into a no doubles defense, putting an infielder out there?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, and I think that makes a lot of sense, honestly, because, you know, late in the game, you're in a no double situation, which means, you know, to lead off the inning, it's a tying runner, the go ahead run. Sometimes you play the third baseman on the line, and you play the outfielders deeper so nothing gets over their head. The reason being, if you get a lead off double, they can bunt them a third, you can score without a hit. So you're in a no double scenario. Honestly, with some of these home run hitters, you got a man on first, maybe you're up by one run and two outs, you got Stanton at the plate, especially in our ballpark, you could take that second baseman instead of putting him on the shortstop side, put him in triples alley, put him all against the wall, and there's no way, unless he hits the ball out of the ballpark, he could hit as hard as he wants. You got four guys to cut off that double and keep the guy from scoring. I'm actually surprised that nobody in the league has done it yet, but again, you can get as aggressive as you want, but you need everybody on board, you know. So there's pitchers involved, obviously, the manager and coaches. But I think it's a good play. I really do, especially in our ballpark.
It's coming, I'll tell you that. This whole defensive thing is reaching a new level.
Ron, are we going to see the Giants employ that anytime soon, you think?
Well, if we had the right matchup, we could. You know, one guy I always thought about doing it was is Timmy, bless his soul, I'm glad to see him back with the Angels, Goldschmidt and Tim Lincecum. He used to hit him really, really hard, and you know that scenario coming up when no doubles with him hitting, you didn't really need the second baseman, so he'd be one guy. He was one scenario that made me start thinking about it years ago, but we just haven't had the situation to do it yet.
Ron Wotus here with Marty and Patrick here at the Public House. Well, I got to ask you about an infielder that did go to the outfielder yesterday and just get the psyche that goes into Kelby Tomlinson. Hey, politicians typically go conventional because it's safe. And in baseball, the lineups are typically pretty conventional. Yesterday was anything but that. So tell us what it was like, that conversation, setting that lineup, and then what was Kelby's nerves like going out there to left field?
Right. Well, you know, there's always points in the year where, you know, you have a couple injuries or a guy can't go, and you can try to protect and have, you know, a deeper roster as you want, but something comes up, the guy could have the flu or, you know, something's wrong when they can't go on the field, and it happens once in a while. And Kelby was forced to go to left field for us. Now, he's never played outfield in a major league game. He did play outfield in the instructional league, center field, not left field. They had him go down there to give him some experience in center field. Of course, he hasn't been playing outfield, all infield for us. So it's not an easy thing. You know, he didn't show any signs of being nervous, but I guarantee you, playing in the instructional league, playing center field, and playing against the Cubs here at AT&T Park is quite a bit different. And he got through it, and it was great to see him out there. He had two balls hit to him. He made the plays and then contributed on the offensive side in the three hole. So big day for him.
Yeah, his bat has picked him up because he had some issues defensively earlier in the season. His bat has really picked him up. He said the last time he played the outfield was in middle school. And I was trying to think. I couldn't even remember myself in the seventh grade. Can you remember the seventh grade?
No, absolutely not.
Not at all. So I had someone emailed me yesterday. Nice man. I think it was Jack Hart, I think was his name.
Okay.
Bill Hart, something like that. From Napa. He says, I went to middle school with you.
Wow.
And turns out it was another Marty Lurie.
Oh, really?
He's a little older than me,
but the imposter.
He invited me to dinner and talked to the wine country and all that, but who could remember?
No, you know? who could remember? And if I'm you, Marty, I have to find that other Marty Lurie and see if you can get him on the show.
Right,
I think that'd be worth listening to.
Very good. All right, we'll take a break. Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants here. We're going to talk about the slide into second base. We're going to have the professor talk a little bit about the new slide rule and Odor, how he reacted, Bautista. And I want to ask, you ever have any of these things happen to you? We're going to find out about that right after this on the Sports Leader. All right, Marty Lurie back here at the Public House as we have Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants, with us. Always a pleasure to see Woe on Sunday. The professor, Patrick, had a great birthday yesterday. Matt Cain had a huge day yesterday, a big two-run double that got him going, and also six solid innings for him, and finished it off with three strikeouts in a row in that sixth inning. And it was nice to see. It was good to see.
What do you think meant more to Matt? The win, the first one since June 22nd of last year, or snapping that 0 for 46 skid? What do you think, Ron?
Well, I think he'll take the win. Yeah, I think that, you know, that's first and foremost. But he was happy to put the bat head on the ball. You know, I said, well, you know, way to swing the bat. Because when Matt first came up, he was a really good hitter.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. He could hit the ball at the ballpark. And somewhere along the line, he's hasn't been the same as he's been in the past. But it's in there, and yesterday he showed it.
Hey, he's 0 for 46. It was the longest 0 for in the National League.
National League.
And he crushed it. I mean, you know, he just crushed it. There was no one was catching that one, I'll tell you that.
No.
That was way out there. Is it an organizational thing to have your pitchers put so much time into their hitting, and it's really impacted a lot of games this year? Or is it just competitive amongst these guys and how they're built, their DNA is constructed?
It's more to the individual, you know, how they're constructed. I mean, look, as an organization, we want our pitchers to be efficient at bunting, first and foremost, and you want them to be productive hitters, you know, because, you know, we always tell them it could keep you in the game longer.
Yeah.
If you can swing the bat, you know, like Bum, you know, he's going to get an extra inning. He could be down by one run, and as a man on third, you're more apt to let the guy that can swing the bat or bunt or safety squeeze get the run in. He gets another inning, gets more another chance for a win. So it's important, but, you know, certain guys put more energy into it. And, you know, like Johnny Cueto, he's been swinging the bat really good, better than I ever seen him. But deep down inside, you know, some conversations I've had with him, he knows he's here to pitch.
Okay.
And he doesn't want to hurt himself or do something that's going to affect his pitching. So I think that's the balance with your pitchers. They want to be as good as they can be, but they know their primary job is to get people out.
And move people over with a bunt once in a while. Yeah, that's the big deal. Well, last Sunday night I was on the air, and all of a sudden all hell broke loose with the slide into second base by Bautista, and Odor, you know, jumps up and pushing, hits him with a roundhouse and all that. And let's talk a little baseball right now. The slide by Bautista, good slide, bad slide? Was it something that would evoke that kind of response?
Well, it did years ago. Look, you know, sliding that late years ago was a time as being a middle infielder. You knew the guy was really trying to get you. And you knew who those guys were that were going to come in hard. And it was very seldom called, you know, interference or called an out. That's the way the game was played. Today, with the new slide rule, that slide that he used was against the rule. I mean, the way it's written, it's really clear on what you can do and what you can't do. So I think the game is a lot more cordial today. I think in baseball in general, there's, you know, they limit knocking people down, hitting batters. It's not the same as it was years ago. And now you have a rule in place to protect the infielder. So the slide was out of line. Did it warrant, you know, a right hook? You know, Odor's had a little history of this. He's kind of an old school type guy. He plays hard, he's the first one to throw the punch. All the guys yell and scream today. They push and they shove, but they don't want to throw the punch. Obviously, this guy is not worried about throwing the punch.
You're a coach in a situation like that. The coaches really never get into the fight, do they? Don Zimmer did with Pedro. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you don't want to. I mean, look, I've seen coaches heated. We get mad about things that are going on. You get mad at the other manager, the other coaches. Sometimes, they're instigating it as well, and you feel they're responsible. But, look, you're supposed to be a peacemaker. The players are supposed to take care of that stuff on the field. It's not for the coaches and the manager to be fighting. But I'll tell you, in the minor leagues, we've seen it all. Many fights broke out where our managers were fighting in the third base box. One manager would go after the other guy, and the whole team's standing around trying to break them up because they're swinging at each other. So I've seen it all over the years in the minor leagues.
Now, Odor, didn't he take out Panic down in Arlington a couple
of
years ago and kind of injured his lower back, if I'm not mistaken?
Good point. See, that's where this thing gets, this guy has a reputation of doing it himself and being the one to throw the first punch. And I think in today's game, there's not many guys that are doing that, So he's not afraid to do it. He went in and with a bad slide. Of course, the slide rule wasn't in place that point in time, and that's just hard-nosed baseball years ago. But the game's evolved. The game's changed. We're trying to protect the players, and the slide was definitely out of line.
Okay. So what he did was he dropped down and tried to hit him in the head with the ball, and he missed him. Now, you're a shortstop, and you Tudor, maybe the greatest shortstop in the game today, supposed to drop down and hit the guy?
Well, that's what we were taught coming up. Yeah, I mean, you have to protect yourself. And when a guy's coming in hard, you're taught to get him down. You know, if you get the throw, if you come down sidearm and that guy's running, he's going to slide to get out of the way. You hit him right between the eyes. And it was very, very common. I hit about four or five guys in my career as a second baseman and a shortstop because that's the only protection you had.
Yeah.
There was no slide rule in place, and it wasn't enforced very much. I mean, unless you were doing a rolling block through the base and it was blatant, you could slide late, and that was never called. And it's dangerous because if they catch your feet planted on the ground and you're trying to turn to double play, that's when you have a serious injury. And years ago, you're playing for your job. You're trying to, it's your job. You're trying to feed your family. They're trying to do that today, but they make a little bit more money. And we want to keep the players on the field. So things have changed quite a bit. But, yeah, Marty, that's the way we taught it. Get the guy down.
Yeah, someone, Jim Ray Hart, former San Francisco Giant, a tremendous hitter in the 60s, passed away just a few days ago. And people started writing into me about Jim Ray Hart stories. And there's one, he was a hard-nosed player. And he went into second high, and Maury Wills hit him right between the eyes, knocked him out. They thought he was dead. They carried him off in a stretcher, and he was out for like a day,
right.
And then came back in. And Willie Mays finished that game at third base, apparently, because Jim Ray Hart had to come out. But I've seen it. You see it happening, and that's why guys, if they're coming up high, they'll peel off because they don't want to get hit.
Well, that's the thing that, how the game has evolved. We would never peel off. You would feel less of a man if you're going to peel off. You go in hard or you slide. You just don't give the guy a free look. One of the first managers I had was Woody Heike in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. I remember him sitting us down one day and talking about Wally Pipp, how this is your job. You're in the lineup. You don't come out. You got to know the difference between an injury and just having some pain. You don't leave the lineup. That was the mentality. And when you took the field and someone's trying to hurt you or hit you, you took offense to it. You're trying to hold down your job. It's a different mentality years ago than it is today. So that's why the game has been played different back there. And you hear the stories about Jimmy Ray Hart and the way we were taught. But you have to change with the times. And they're changing some of the rules of the game to keep players healthy and keep them on the field.
Bumgarner, the big old hoss, the lefty, goes out today on the bump. And earlier this week in San Diego, another stellar outing from him. But he also got into it with Will Myers. And is seemingly over Will Myers having the audacity to look at the scoreboard. What, Ron, how do you deal with a guy like Bumgarner who gets real mad and boy, nobody seems to want to take him on? Or it's just a different world out there. So what do you say to Bumgarner when he comes back to the dugout?
Well, you don't have to say anything to Mad Bum. He takes care of everything on his own. Look, he's a fierce competitor, and that was just a misunderstanding, I think, with him and Will Myers. And Will Myers, I don't think, wanted any confrontation with Bum. And that's usually what happens. A guy looks at you, you think he says something, and there's misunderstandings. But, you know, you're trying to win the game. You're trying to get people out. You don't care if you're friends with the opposing club. Right. You talk about years ago, right, fraternization and being buddy-buddy. It's a little bit different, and Bum's kind of a throwback that way. And he's very competitive, and he's going to do what he has to do to win the game.
Do you think that an opponent's going to try and go after him and check him? Because Bumgarner, a lot of people are intimidated, but I feel like in the bull ring of men, someone's going to feel like they need to check him.
Well, it won't be a little guy, I can tell you that.
It won't be Odor, right?
Right.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Did you ever get in a fight on the field? I know as a coach you're a peacemaker. What about as a player? Did you ever get heated enough to get in a fight?
Well, we got in fights. Look, I've been hit many times. It wasn't that I had the 3-home run game. I was a guy, you know, hitting behind the guy that hit the big home run, and he had a few in a series, and you get hit. You go to first base. You know, there's really a fine line between, you know, it has to be a long history years ago. You expected to get hit. You know, the fights I got, and I got more confrontations with a couple of teammates of mine for showing me up on the field, which you know, I guess you would constitute as a fight, you know. So it happens, but that's the way we played the game. You know, I think the scenario I was talking, I was on third base, and a guy hit a chopper. I probably should have scored. He comes running across the field, throwing his arms up, saying, why didn't I score?
Right.
And, you know, it happens. We're all human. So, you know, obviously you go and have a conversation with them after that happens because you didn't tolerate that stuff. You know, that's not how you played the game. You didn't show each other up.
Very good. I love it. Ron Wotus here, the bench coach of the Giants. All right, let's be the professor here a little bit. Running first to third, we've seen a couple this week and in the season where the runner goes first to third and he's out at third, but the run scores. Now, the runner wants to go first to third, maybe to draw a throw, if he thinks that it could be a play at the plate, and that saves the run at the plate. Who dictates that? Does the runner have to figure that out? Is the coach the one bringing him? How does that play work? We've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah, mostly it's the player with his instincts and knowing where the ball's hit and doing all his preparation before, knowing whether it's going to be a play at the plate. What the scoreboard says, do I need to cut, you know, if it's going to be close at home, they have a chance to get him out, and this is a big run, okay. Do I need to continue to third? Even if they cut the ball and get me out, you want to do that if it's a big run at the plate. Okay. So it's mostly on the player, but as base coaches, some guys take it to a different level. There's many times where there's a man on first and a man on second, and you'll signal to the guy at first, and you say, hey, I'm sending him. The outfield's in, but I'm sending him. I'm not waiting for another hit. You know they got a great closer.
Here,
you're pointing at the first baseman,
around,
and you're saying, hey, this guy's going. The first base coach, Billy Hayes, will remind a guy at first base, hey, if it's going to be close, don't let, you know, keep going to third. So the coaches help with that, but ultimately it comes down to the player executing it.
Boy, very good. All right, that's the professor talking about that. Rob Manfred out there talking about doing away with intentional walks, the pace of the game. What do you think about that one?
Well, that one doesn't bother me as much as some of the other adjustments as you hear them trying to do away with the shift, you know, saying they can't shift. I mean, you can tell guys where you can play. So that I don't believe is the best thing for baseball. But, you know, putting up four fingers if they want to speed up the game, because there is a problem with the game being drawn out. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I'm one that has always said, I don't want a time clock in baseball. That's why I like the game. But obviously, you know, the public with the polls and everything, the interest in the game, they dictate what they want to see. And the game would not suffer to speed it up some. But I don't think it's the intentional walk. I think it's all this replay nonsense we're going through that's making these games longer.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. No, very good. We're getting a round of applause for that. Very good.
I mean, how often do we even see an intentional walk? It's pretty rare.
It's not. You're right. It's not as much. And I do like it out here better at the public house than the bunker. We have an audience, and you get applauded for the things you say.
They're actually listening to you. Yeah. All right. So, again, I'm listening to Jack Zarenzik on the way in. He's talking about the Pirate logo from the 60s. And if look it up online, Pittsburgh Pirate logo, it's the Pirate face. It's the earring hanging down. It's the bandana, the look and all that kind of stuff, the skull and crossbones. And he says, do you know who was the picture? Who was the actor who sat for that picture, basically? And I said, you know, I said to myself, no, I have no idea who that is. And it turns out the general manager of the Pirates was Joe L. Brown. His father was Joe E. Brown, the comedian. And they loved the Hollywood stars. So when they needed the logo, they went to get Frank Gifford.
Really?
Now, that I think that may be the later one.
That may be the later one?
That doesn't look like
it
Frank.
It looks like Jimmy Durante right there.
But it was Frank Gifford.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. Is that Frank Gifford?
Yeah, it sure is. Wow.
How about that? That's
some trivia that will come in handy at a party sometime.
I never knew that. Very good, Pat. Very good. So look it up, the 1960 Pirates logo. Talking about these shifts and the other thing that I heard on the radio today was the Pirates. Again, I heard a lot of Pirate stuff. They're bringing the outfielders in now. They're feeling if there's a pitcher on the hill, two-seamer guy, they're not squaring them up as much. They're not gapping the shots as much. And they want to cut off balls coming in. Do you do that at all? Do you bring the outfielders in for some hitters? Well, of course, a weak hitter maybe. But what about for a Stanton or some guy like that?
Yeah, well, it's a little more difficult. Usually, I mean, look, everybody does it in the game. You adjust to the scoreboard, the hitter, the count as an outfielder. You know, if you're in a no-double situation, you don't want a ball over your head.
Yeah.
You play deeper. But typically, you play to the hitter and the scoreboard. I think everybody does it. Look, when you have two strikes and a man on second base and you expect the pitcher to execute his pitch, you want to cheat in. You want to give yourself a chance to throw the runner out at home plate. So I don't know if they're doing this to an extreme level, but, you know, in today's business with all the information we have, for instance, you look at ground ball pitchers to fly ball pitchers, you know, and some pitchers are 77% ground ball. So why wouldn't you cheap the outfielders in with a man on second base? Because there's more apt that a ground ball is going to get through to have give yourself a chance to throw them than playing your normal depth to catch a well-hit fly ball. So you can take it to that level again, but you know, it's a little unique if they're getting real extreme with it. But everybody considers those things. Any outfielders have always tried to play the count, the scoreboard, and the hitters in the situation of the game.
I think this park gets nerve-wracking to do anything other than cut off Triple's alley. Because if you fool, not to say fool around, but if you make a lot of adjustments with these outfielders and that ball goes out there, it's an automatic triple. And you really have to cut off that gap.
Yeah, you do. You have to be aware of it. And you see most people come in here and they bunch the right fielder. That means the right fielder's playing not straight. He's playing more in the gap. And that's, you know, that's a philosophy that's been around forever. You look at the ballpark and you want to take the big part of the field away. Yeah. Right field is the smallest area, so if the ball's hit over there, it's a double anyways. It's not a triple. So if you're in between and, you know, you don't know for sure where this guy's going to hit the ball, I shouldn't say for sure. You never know for sure, but you're playing percentages, right? If the guy's a dead pull hitter, that's the tough one now. Are you gonna put the outfielder in right center? Are you going to leave him straight where he might have a chance to catch the ball or field that ground ball and throw somebody out? So it's not as simple as the statistics. No. You always have to put your baseball acumen into the equation. And, you know, the human element, you know, if you got a pitcher, is he going to make the pitch? Can he execute the pitch? Does he leave it? So there's so many things that come into it other than just the statistics.
Yeah, it seems like you go to the game and watch the game, but, boy, look what's going on behind it. That is why you are the professor. That is why he is the professor, and he teaches us baseball every week. And really, you explain it. You really do explain it well. We'll let you go with this one last thought, Pat.
Sure.
The Arizona infield, playing defense then, my God, it's like playing on a pool table. I mean, really, Duffy had some great plays. Yeah. Crawford got eaten up a couple of years ago. What do you tell your guys about playing in Arizona?
Well, the infield's fast. I mean, that's number one, and it's different. You know, you come from a field here that's more fair, more normal, a little bit slower. But there, you know, the ball travels through the air quicker, too. It's just not on the ground, and it hits the dirt there sometimes, and it picks up speed. So, one, you can play deeper, right? When you're playing the infield in, you're playing double plays, you can play deeper in those scenarios. Besides that, you just have to adjust to the field. That's part of being a professional. That's why these guys are the best in the world at what they do. You know, they could go to Toronto and play on turf and have to adjust to those conditions and the whether it's Arizona or AT&T, you have to adjust. And if you have experience and you lived a little bit, you can handle those things better. But you do see players in a new environment, in a different fast field. Sometimes they get tied up. They get eaten up because they just don't have the experience dealing with it.
Well, great to have you, Will.
It's great to be here.
Really, great to have you. Let's hear for Ron Wotus, huh?
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Very good. Well, that's the bench coach of the Giants. Have a great game today, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks, I think.
That's Colorado.
We got a, what? Then the Dodgers, and it'll be a few weeks, a couple
few
of weeks before
I'll
we
look
see
forward
you
to that. It's great seeing you, Marty.
Right, thanks, Ron.
Patrick, good
yeah.
to
right,
see you
Ron
as well.
That's Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. More coming up on the Sports Leader.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the Sports Leader.